Hey everybody, it is time. It is time to hop on a plane, a train, a boat, a goat, a bike, a car, and find your way upstate New York to a little town outside of Phoenicia. I don't know what the town's called actually, but the place that we're going to be in is called Menla, and it is a gorgeous, epic retreat center in the middle of the forest in the Catskill Mountains with a spa and organic vegetarian food with lots of beans and yoga in the morning and a swimming pool and a swimming hole and trails. And yes, it is an HLN retreat. It is a 5-day retreat from Wednesday, June 12th to Sunday, June 16th. It is the biggest retreat we've ever put on, and the entire team is going to be there. They are all flying from different corners of the country to come together to hold you in the healing magic that is Somatics. We will be teaching you how to belong without having to fit in, how to find safety inside of yourself and share that with others, how to receive witnessing, how to feel for your boundaries instead of fawning. We are going to cover so much, and you're going to be doing it in the most ideal setting of being fed, of being loved, of resting, of enjoying the forest and nature, and being with us and 60 other bodies. So please go to the website, holisticlifenavigation.com, and click on events, and you'll find it there. Wednesday, June 12th to Sunday, June 16th. All the info as well can be found directly through the link in this episode details. I am just so thrilled for this, and I can't wait to see some of you in person. On today's episode, I welcome back Karen Hurd, and we debunk some common myths about beans, because beans are a very important piece of the puzzle to healing stress and trauma.
To demonize the bean because of the phytic acid, then we need to try to remove phosphorus out of every part of our life. If we do that, you will not have life. You will not exist. So it's like we're trying to pick out, you know, the bad things in it, and then we say, therefore, we can't have it anymore. You know, we're back to the internet. You know, we can't use the internet because they have, you know, these bad sites on there, so we will not use it at all.
Welcome to the Holistic Life Navigation Podcast. I am your host, Luis Mujica. I was sick and depressed until I discovered that I could make music, and then my whole life transformed because I began learning how to listen more deeply. Listen to life, to the people around me, and to my body. And that's when I realized that the body speaks through sensations, and learning this new language meant relearning my body and mind. I soon healed myself of many chronic conditions and then began teaching others how to do so as well. Holistic Life Navigation combines nutrition, self-inquiry, and somatic experiencing to help you release stress and trauma just by listening to your own body. This podcast serves as a place to share my experiences as well as the experiences of many others who have healed and are healing through unique, unorthodox, and unusual ways. Your time to learn begins now. When I started entering into, I would say, the most profound physical healings of my life, it was when I incorporated beans. And I didn't do it consciously. I wasn't thinking, beans are good for me, I'm going to eat them. I grew up without beans ever. I think maybe there was like a can of baked beans at a certain kind of function, but they weren't part of our lives. No lentils, nothing. And when I, which is weird, you know, for a Hispanic family, but I come from an Americanized Hispanic family. So we weren't eating our traditional foods, let's say. And then as time went on, I discovered macrobiotics. I think it was in 2010 or 2009, 2010, I discovered macrobiotics, and I was just like blown away by the simplicity
I loved the indigeneity because a lot of ideas of macrobiotic philosophies are just eating local, which really means you're eating the whole natural plant foods of the land you're on. So it just really resonated with me. And at the time, I was following more of a Japanese traditional style macrobiotic nutrition diet, if you will. To me, it felt more like a culture and a lifestyle, a ritual. And a big part of macrobiotics are beans. And I would have macro bowls very often, which is some kind of grain with some kind of bean and steamed vegetables and sauerkraut, maybe some kind of tahini. And as I was eating these every day, I started noticing my anxiety going away. I started noticing my rashes going away. I started noticing my body going into a really deep state of repair. And I mean, a lot of people notice this with macrobiotic diets. That's why they're quite successful and popular. They've been said to cure cancer, to remove autoimmune diseases, get rid of inflammation, improve mental health. And I was experiencing that in my body. And then, you know, years and years and years of eating that way, then I meet Karen Hurd, have her on my show like over a year ago or 2 years ago. I can't even remember now. I think over a year ago. And she brang biology into it for me. She brang biology to my brain and explained to me that beans have a very sophisticated intelligence in grabbing adrenaline in the gut from the bile and flushing it out into the toilet. Whereas without all the soluble fiber in beans, the body just recycles that adrenaline again to reuse it. So your body is this like closed circuit, cyclical current of adrenaline. And adrenaline is our fight or flight hormone. So as she was telling me about this, I put two and two together very quickly. And I thought, well, this makes so much sense. One way we heal stress and trauma is by increasing the amount of soluble fiber in our diets. If every meal is loaded with soluble fiber, we are consistently all throughout the day whisking away this excess buildup of adrenaline, which if not whisked away, will turn into anxiety, panic attacks, insomnia, inflammation, any kind of degenerative conditions of the gut. So many constriction of the muscles. Like there's so many things we go into that become medicalized from the constant state of fight or flight hormone, right, being circulated and stimulated. So with her wisdom and her knowledge and her studies, I started applying even more beans to my diet and more beans to my clients' diet. And one after the other, people were having miraculous breakthroughs, especially around stress and trauma. I found it most exciting in my six-week course because we have hundreds of people that take this course. So I'm watching the comments come in. And during our Wednesday shares, I'm listening to people talk about what it was like when they started eating these beans. And to hear people say, I feel centered in my body for the first time, or I feel safe for the first time, or I'm sleeping again. I haven't slept in 10 years. Or I saw my mother and didn't have a panic attack. It's phenomenal. And what's so important for me is how accessible beans are, how easy they are, how affordable they are. The only thing that stands in the way between us and a bean is the fear of bloating, is the fear of trypsin inhibitors, the fear of phytic acid, oxalates, lectins, these compounds and these experiences that happen with beans really scare people away from them. And we think they're not good for us. And I understand how we can deduce that from some of the studies. Yet it doesn't make much sense when we honor our ancestors and realize for tens of thousands of years, they were eating grains and beans. So there's a new movement away from these, you know, very natural foods, very indigenous foods. And as we move away from those, we also move away from the wisdom and simplicity of these foods. You can go to a store and literally pay $1.50 and you can eat beans for almost a week. Now that's phenomenal. So everyone listening to this, beans, in my opinion, are the way for sustainable healing. Even if you can't change your entire diet, even if you can't eat organic, if you just eat beans with every meal, you can affordably be adding soluble fiber to your body and be removing excess adrenaline so your body can function better. That's very important, especially important for our growing children. And speaking of growing, you'll hear in this episode how beans actually allow and boost the human growth hormone. They don't remove or become an anti-nutrient like we would think they would with lectins and such. They don't inhibit growth at all. They actually promote growth and they promote life force. So I had Karen come on and kind of go through a list of specific hot topics that I get in my Instagram feed and through email and in my course around the controversy and skepticism around incorporating beans. So let's dive in and have a listen. I'm so excited to welcome Karen Hurd back to the show again. Thanks for coming back.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
I there's so much I could talk to you about. Like, I literally have a list going for, you know, future conversations because you're really fun and easy to talk to. So I feel like I could drop anything and it would become this profound, entertaining conversation. What I felt really drawn to is to talk about actually the controversy around beans, because I don't know if you've experienced it, but you know, I talk about a lot of really controversial subjects in the world, and nothing triggers people like beans. So, you know, they come at me or to me with all these really intense questions about their experiences, or, oh, but no, beans kill you because dot, 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 dot. And I just thought it'd be great to have an episode I could direct people to where sure. They could hear just like kind of parsing out some of this misinformation about these humble little creatures we call beans that have been feeding us for thousands of years very, very well. I guess I'll start by asking you, like, what's your experience with any kind of like pushback or fear around them?
The biggest fear around them is that they are, you know, blamed for being gas producers. And that's what I hear 90% of the time. There's a few people that will bring up the lectins and the phytic acid and the oxalates, which I do want to talk about and address because they are not an issue. And you'll find out why when we talk about it. But the big thing is the gas. And that's probably most people can experience gas. But they have to understand what is creating the gas. Are the beans creating the gas, or would you have had gas if you would eaten something else and you just have more gas because you're eating beans? And people need to understand these things. So gas.
Hold on. I just want to pause you. Sorry. Sure. This is exactly what I want to talk about. Just for anyone tuning in, if this is the first time you've ever listened to Karen and I speak, we have a great list. I mean, there's a beautiful amount of episodes. You'll see it in the episode details about nutrition. And particularly her work complements mine because she discovered many years ago, like over three decades ago, how soluble fiber removes adrenaline from the bowel. And beans are the food that have the most soluble fiber for the amount that you eat. So she discovered by applying this in her practice, first to save her daughter's life and then to actually heal a lot of illness in your own body and other people. I connected to your work because as a trauma therapist, adrenaline is the hormone that we're always working with, fight or flight. And so I've found with my clients and my students, when they adhere to the bean diet, the bean protocol, not even fully sometimes, but when they adhere to just having beans even, they have less insomnia, their panic attacks go away, their rashes subside, all these things that are the, you know, experience of someone with trauma and excess adrenaline. So I'm just saying that now so people understand within the context of why we're talking about beans and the side effects of them. Because mm-hmm. Some people, when they're given the information about beans with PTSD and adrenaline, they say, oh, but no, I get bloated, or phytic acid, or the anti-nutrients of inhibitors of lectins. So just letting people know why we're talking about this. So now I'm going to, you know, go back to you and tell us where you were going with the bloating piece.
Yeah, that's great. That was an excellent summary. So the thing we have to understand is, how is gas produced? And gas is responsible then, obviously, we can burp it up, we can pass it the other way, and we can also, if it gets trapped, we can become bloated. So if we don't pass the gas, if we don't get it out of the gastrointestinal tract some way or another, then we get our our stomachs balloon out like a balloon. You know, they just, that's what happens. They get hard. It's very uncomfortable. Trapped gases can be extremely painful. And so we want to not hold the gas in, you know, and for in social situations, people want to hold the flatulence in. It's just like, you do that, you're going to be in excruciating pain in just a few moments, you know. But it's embarrassing and you don't want to pass the gas. And I get that. So what's causing gas? Do beans cause gas? Do cruciferous vegetables like broccoli and cauliflower and cabbage, do they cause gas? Because some people eat beans and some people eat cruciferous vegetables or whatever, and they don't have any gas at all. So why is it okay for one person? It's not okay for the other. Are we looking at the source of food as the creation of the gas, or have we failed to look at the mechanism of action and what's creating gas? And that's what we have to look at today. What is the mechanism of action that creates gas? We have basically two different types of way to digest foods in the human body. One, we will use digestive enzymes, and that breaks down our food into smaller pieces so that they will be absorbed through the gastrointestinal tract and into the bloodstream so that we can utilize them. But there is another way that we can digest foods, and that's through the fermentation process. We see that, you know, when in wineries, you know, we're using fermentation to break down grapes so that they can be converted into wine. With kimchi, sauerkraut, you know, all of our fermented, think of fermented things, you know, we're using the fermentation process to actually break down these particles, and usually their proteins are what we're breaking down, and to denature the proteins and make them more digestible. So it's a process of digestion. So we have these two processes that occur in a human gastrointestinal tract, using digestive enzymes, which don't create gas, and fermentation. Fermentation creates gas because the byproduct of this particular digestive process is that you will have gas released, and most often it's CH4. It's a methane gas. It's the stinky gas that, you know, we all, you know, and that people are always looking at, you know, when they say, oh, I have SIBO, that's this is a problem in the gut with bacterial overgrowth, you know, and that I'm checking my methane levels. And well, yeah, almost all gas that you're going to pass is methane. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, that's the chemical reaction that happens. So fermentation creates this, and we know that. I mean, if you live near a winery, you can live within 5 miles of a winery and you can smell the fermenting grapes. Or if you've ever made homemade sauerkraut or kimchi, you take that lid off, or don't even have to take the lid off. I mean, there's gas being produced and it's smelly. And this is part of the fermentation process. So what happens in the gastrointestinal tract to make fermentation happen over just using digestive enzymes? Because either process will work. Why don't we just always use digestive enzymes? We make lots of digestive enzymes. Those are naturally made by the cells that line the gastrointestinal tract, line the stomach, the duodenum, which is part of the gastrointestinal tract. These are all very potent enzymes that do a great job, and we make plenty of them. And so why did we move into a fermentation stage instead of using digestive enzymes? It's because of hormones, and very particularly the one you just mentioned a little while ago, our fight and flight hormone, adrenaline. And so those hormones, and the fight and flight hormones are actually two, epinephrine and norepinephrine, but we just usually classify them together and just call them adrenaline. We need to understand that hormones, and it's not just those two, but estrogen, testosterone, we have lots of hormones. Hormones' purpose is to trigger chemical reactions and to trigger signal transduction pathways so something will occur in the cell in some process. That is the purpose of a hormone. If we let all the chemical reactions that happen in our body just happen, what's called spontaneously, on their own, whenever they just happen, we would not be alive, because it's too slow. These reactions are so, the spontaneity of the reactions are so infrequent that we wouldn't have any chemical reactions happening. And we have trillions upon trillions of chemical reactions that are happening per picosecond. So we have to have a catalyst to drive these reactions, chemical reactions, forward so that we can stay alive. The catalyst in the human body at the cellular level are hormones. So now we have that background. So let's put the hormones in the gastrointestinal tract. What if we have more adrenaline? What if you're coming up on a menstrual cycle for women, you know, and you have more, you're going to have a second peak of estrogen and you're going to have a very large peak of progesterone at that time. These are hormones that will make it into your gastrointestinal tract as the hormone itself. You know, we think, oh, well, hormones are being made by the endocrine glands, which they are. Endocrine glands are glands that produce hormones, and they're released into the bloodstream. And so then they get all used up. That's not true with a hormone. A hormone is utilized again and again and again. It triggers reaction and it has a resting state and a taunt state, an active state and an inactive state where it triggers reaction, then it rests. Then it goes trigger another reaction and it rests. And it can be used over and over and over again. Our liver pulls out these hormones and people say, well, the liver will break all the hormones down into their little constituents, carbons and hydrogen. And the liver very rarely does that. There's no point in it. And so these hormones are excreted whole in their complete, powerful form. They are excreted by the form of putting it into bile, which passes into our gastrointestinal tract. So now we have a bunch of estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, the adrenaline. There's other hormones involved too. There's corticosteroids. We have lots of hormones. They're all in your gastrointestinal tract. Well, do they just say, okay, well, we're passive now. We are not going to continue to trigger chemical reactions. No, we're talking chemistry here. Okay. This is not you. There's a brain inside the each, you know, molecule of hormone that says, I will choose to do this or choose it. No, they're all flying around in chemistry. We have all these little molecules flying around and they hit all the cells. And if they hit it at the right speed, at the right angle, they can trigger in the right place. They can trigger a reaction on a receptor site in the endothelial cells, in the cells that line the gastrointestinal tract, which are controlling whether we ferment foods or we just use digestive enzymes. So the preference, of course, we want to use digestive enzymes, but if you have two processes that could occur at the same time, which will take priority, digestive enzymes or fermentation? Fermentation, because this is a hormonally triggered reaction. So the hormone.
Can I pause there? Because this is great. So this essentially means that if someone deals with a lot of gas and bloating, we're essentially saying they have a high hormonal load in the gut.
Exactly. That is a one-to-one correlation. Yes.
That's so important because I think of the people in my courses and in my practices who have implemented beans. I think of the ones that are like, I feel amazing. My insomnia is gone. Like I feel better than I've ever felt in my life. I mean, people actually saying who have had PTSD for 20 years, I actually feel safe in my body for the first time ever because they're eating beans. And then we have the people that are like, this is horrible. My stomach is killing me. I'm bloated. I'm constipated or I'm going too much. And then when I notice the difference between these groups, the groups that are still having a lot of trouble are groups that are still stimulated. So they might still have coffee in the morning, let's say. Or they had like a 12-hour workday and their stress hormones are off the chart. So the beans are literally interacting with these endothelial cells that are being activated by all this adrenaline, let's say. That was happening with these people.
Yes, yes. That's exactly what's happening with people. And that's why a person cannot have any gas, you know, let's take a woman, and then they become pregnant or they're lactating, you know, or because we have pregnancy hormones, we have lactation, prolactin hormones, and they are also triggering this fermentation pathway. And so they'll say, well, I didn't have gas before with beans and now all of a sudden I have gas. Or someone that eats beans all the time, so they never have gas, but now they're under real high stress, whatever the situation is, they're under high stress. And all of a sudden they have a lot of gas and they're like, I've been eating beans. Why do we have gas now? Because your stress levels are just a little bit too much for the amount of soluble fiber than the beans that are actually carrying out the hormone, which we've discussed in other episodes, how that works. But
that's really important. This is so important because this is why I love your work, is how nuanced it is and how holistic it gets. Because I've done your courses and this is where it goes into even the realms of, or especially the realms of chemicals, of pheromones from essential oils, chemical fragrances. Someone can have the quote perfect diet. They can be following the bean protocol really well. And if they're loading up on essential oils every morning, or especially in their armpits where all those glands are, they're triggering a hormonal response. They're going to have gas. Yes. They're like, well, why am I bloated? I'm eating perfectly. So this is where the whole of the person's life comes in, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. So yes, you're exactly right about the essential oils or perfumes or just the stress of the moment. I mean, I had people that, you know, are in all walks of life, but I'm thinking about a client of mine that works at a university and she teaches theater arts. And so they are, you know, have to go on stage and they get, you know, the actors get really nervous. And she has been telling them, you need to eat beans before you go on stage because it will remove all those stress hormones and you can perform better. And they're doing this like, this is amazing. Or, you know, I'm telling people now that are listening to this program, if you feel stressed out and you say, I gotta calm down. You know, I'm just, you know, all hyped up about whatever the issue is. Just go eat a few spoonfuls of beans. It doesn't have to be some big crock of them, just a few spoonfuls. And you will notice it will be less than 5 minutes. Usually it's under that. Sometimes just even a minute. You're like, oh, okay. I can deal with this. I'm okay. I'm not freaking out. I'm not over the edge. You know?
It's so important. You know, I'm loving that this information is going out there in response to stress. Because so much nutrition information, or I should say, people's motivation to eat a different kind of diet or have a different food lifestyle usually comes from like something conditional, like I want to lose weight, or I have this rash, or I have inflammation. All good reasons, by the way, but still, like that tends to be where it ends. And stress becomes this like mental thing, and we forget how biological stress and trauma really are. They're total biologies. They're not just mindsets.
Absolutely.
They relate to each other, the mindset and the biology, but it is a biology. So to know, oh, I have some beans and I have less adrenaline coursing in my system, like that is so much more important than meditating in the moment. Like I love meditation. I love breath work. You know, I'm a somatic therapist. So I believe in all these techniques. And I think the biology of the body having a food stuff that's literally physically whisking that adrenaline is someone's chance at actually healing from stress or managing stress even.
Yes. It is very effective. It really works. And then it works even better if we don't put things in that stress the body intake. I mean, you and I, sometimes we can't take away our mental stresses. I mean, the boss yelled at you. How are you going to prevent that from happening? Or, you know,
that's right. Whatever.
So some things are outside of our control. But if we're pumping down the caffeine at the same time we're eating beans, it's like, okay, you are increasing your adrenaline while we're trying to whisk it away. And it's just like, okay, at some point your caffeine's going to win the battle because you've dipped too much caffeine and we don't have enough soluble fiber to pull out all of that adrenaline that you created.
This is great.
When you do them both together, you know, you're doing your soluble fiber and then you're eliminating these things that create these adrenaline rushes.
That's what I find to be the most... The groups that I work with have the most success are the ones that detoxify from caffeine and then they ease into the bean protocol and they have this like life-changing experiences. The ones who stay with the caffeine, and I'm saying this out, I've said this in many episodes, I'm not judging anyone who's using coffee, a single parent with three kids and two jobs, and like they need to boost their adrenaline to get through the day. Like I empathize with that. So I'm not saying good or bad in any way, but the biology of it is if you're stimulating yourself with caffeine and then, like you said, you're taking in beans, you're probably going to have that chemical reaction. So this is good for people to hear who are saying, but I'm super bloated or gassy. I want to pivot to the next point just because of time, if that's okay. Because that feels like that was answered beautifully. And in a way, it gives everyone tools listening when they realize, oh, on this day I was really bloated. You can go into some self-inquiry and wonder, like, what happened that day? You know, what did I go through that could have created a hormonal stress response? So that's helpful for people, right? For people to figure that out. Okay, I'm so excited to talk about phytates and lectins.
Right. Can I just go back to give people hope that do have the gluten? Because
Please.
They really do need the soluble fiber to remove it. But there is something called psyllium. And psyllium cannot be fermented because there's no carbohydrate there to ferment. It is just straight soluble fiber. See, to ferment something, you have to have a carbohydrate molecule or, you know, you have to have something there. But psyllium, there's nothing to ferment. So if they're saying, well, I can't eat the beans, so I guess I'm just out, you know, in the cold. No, you use psyllium instead because there is no way that it can be fermented.
Oh, brilliant. You just made so many people happy. Okay. I guarantee you. And it's even, I even think of my clients who travel all over the world all the time. Mm-hmm. It's stressful for them to like even bring a can of beans. Like I bring beans everywhere I go, but some people don't want to do that. So psyllium husk also gives you this like portable option just to pour it in your water bottle and drink it, which I love. Yes. What's your dosage you prefer? Do you just get to the 5 grams like you would with beans?
5 grams is 2 level teaspoons of psyllium.
So you do that about 3 or 4 times a day.
Sometimes people take tablespoons and do 2 tablespoons. That's a lot.
That's a lot, yeah.
2 level teaspoons. So 1 level teaspoon is 1/4 cup of beans. And
oh, wow.
Even 1 level teaspoon of psyllium will calm you down just like the beans would. And
beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So if someone's listening that thinks, well, I'm not going to incorporate beans yet, I'm not ready, I want to start with just getting rid of all this adrenaline. Would you say 2 level teaspoons 3 times a day, every 4 hours? Like, how do you recommend the cycle of that through the day?
If they are a really stressed out person, I would say 1 teaspoon, 6 separate times a day. If they're nice. They're fine, and they're just saying, hey, I just want to incorporate soluble fiber, really don't have any issues, and it would be 2 level teaspoons at breakfast, at lunch, and then at dinner, 3 times a day.
Brilliant. And I'm assuming you want the 1 level teaspoon 6 times a day because you want a frequency of that soluble fiber, right, like whisking it away as it's being created through the day.
Yes. It's the frequency that's important. Somebody say, well, I'll take, you know, an entire 6 teaspoons all at once and get it done for the day, and I don't have to worry about it. It's like, you're only going to whisk away the adrenaline that was in the GI tract at that moment in time.
As the sponge-like, you know, psyllium is going through. And then once it's all the way through, it's like, done whisking.
Yes, exactly.
That's really good for people to hear. That's brilliant, Karen. So, okay, the lectins and the phytates are so controversial. Like, even with nuts and seeds, people will be like, don't eat them. And one thing I want to say just publicly, people listening, our daughter had a growing issue. So from birth until about 6 months of age, just wasn't growing at all. And she was on the lowest percentile. She was super healthy. She, like, all these tests, you know, were done. She's like, she's healthy, she's alive, she's well, but she's just not growing. So what did we do? We made mung beans because those are a staple in our house. And when she was about 5 and a half, her diet was then mung beans and breast milk. And we would mash up the mung beans and she just couldn't get enough of them. Within like 3 or 4 weeks, she started growing so fast that by, I think, 9 or 10 months of age, she was the highest percentile. So it was my personal experience of this idea that anti-nutrient or it will stunt growth being a total myth. So I want you to explain to us biochemically what this means with phytates and anti-nutrients and the lectins.
Your phytates, yeah, we'll start with, they're different. So let's start with the phytates. Okay, they are our source of phosphorus. And in our bodies, everything is happening through signal transduction pathways in the cell, you know, to get chemical reactions to happen. There's something called CAMP. It's part of the phosphorus pathways. If we do not have phosphorus, we cannot exist, because phosphorus is the most important element that we have that drives chemical reactions forward. And it's because of, it's got valence electrons, and it has to do with, you know, it's also a chelating agent that can, you know, it's can be very important in cancer. It's actually used as a nutraceutical. You know, it's classified as an anti-nutrient, but it's a nutraceutical at the same time. It's because people don't have the full picture. It's typical with human beings. We get a hold of one piece of information. Phytic acids keep binding up the calcium and the iron and all my minerals, and so they can't be absorbed. Well, that is true. But it also is setting into place all of our signal transduction pathways that we can't have happen without that phosphorus, which is a source of phosphorus for us. And so it's very important that we have it. And we have all kinds of other sources of calcium and iron that are not bound up. And so, and as you know, people are into chelation therapy in many ways now. It's just like, this is a perfect chelation type of therapy. So what we do is we only have part of the picture. It's like, you know, like when the internet first became popular, you know, we're going to go back several decades. You know, some people are, internet's terrible. It's got bad things on the internet. Well, there are bad things on the internet. I mean, we can find bad, nasty sites anywhere on the internet, but there is a ton of good in the internet that we can learn and, you know, and we can benefit by. It is the same way with phytic acid or any type of, quote, I'm putting this in big quotes, anti-nutrient, because I do not consider phytic acid or any phytate, anything like that. We're going to lectins in a minute and the oxalates, but They are not anti-nutrients. They are actually very beneficial. And without them, we cannot live.
So I have a question then. I want some clarity because you said both happened. You said it does bind mineral absorption and the usage, and then it also has these incredible pathways it opens up. Can you explain, as it binds a mineral, how does that not affect us negatively?
Because, well, it can if we are in a situation where we are nutrient deficient. But you see, not all calcium occurs with phylates. And so we're saying that every phylate, you know, that it's always going to be bound up, but it's not. We have so many chemical reactions, and it's like, okay, could we take a ratio or a percentage of, you know, how much you're eating? Because you can get calcium from other sources. Calcium is in every single thing that we eat. I mean, it's in spices. I mean, it's everywhere. Calcium is prolific. Iron is also, it's not as prolific as calcium in foods, but I mean, we get a lot of iron-rich foods. So if we are to demonize the bean because of the phytic acid, then we need to try to remove phosphorus out of every part of our life. If we do that, you will not have life. You will not exist. So it's like we're focusing on a food that is rich in phytic acid. And by the way, soybeans are the highest, that one of the highest ones that we have. And, you know, look at all the benefits that soy could possibly have too, although there are some detriments to soy also. So we're trying to pick out, you know, the bad things in it. And then we say, therefore we can't have it anymore. You know, we're back to the internet. You know, we can't use the internet because they have, you know, these bad sites on there. So we will not use it at all.
Yeah.
And so, well, we pick and choose. And so you are eating other things in your diet besides beans. I mean, I think that people probably are eating other things. And so
I was just going to say, like, essentially, if you're having a rounded whole food diet, these phytates or phytic acid from beans are nothing to even think about.
Right. There's not even, you don't even think about
it. Not even a thought. Exactly. Now, can you tell us just like one, two, or three very simple benefits of the phytic acid? What did you call those trans what pathways?
They're signal transduction pathways.
Transduction. Yeah. What does that do for the body?
It allows the chemical reactions to happen. If you don't have
all
that
chemical reactions.
Yes. If you don't have them, you will not have energy in the cell. The cell cannot do its job. And
got it.
Or the cell doesn't do its job, you don't have life.
So it literally creates life.
It literally creates life.
That's amazing.
It is without phosphorus, none of us would be here.
That's incredible. No. Okay. So it's literally the opposite of what comes to mind when you think anti-nutrient. Life-giving.
It is life-giving. Without phosphorus, we're not here.
Amazing. And now, just a really quick tangent, like under a minute, if possible. Okay. Phosphorus affects bone health positively, right? So like what's the relationship to beans and bones?
Because phosphorus is going to take minerals to your bones. You have to have something. Calcium is not going to just be free floating in your bloodstream as a calcium ion. It goes out as an ion. And so it's going to have to bind with something, and it does with phosphorus. And then phosphorus and calcium are making up your bones. I mean, they're working together.
That's amazing. So again, this, because when I've asked people what their fears are around, and we'll get to the lectins next, but what their fears are with lectins and phytic acid, it's specifically this idea of an anti-nutrient that is going to weaken their bones and stunt the growth of their children. And you're literally showing us chemically how it's the complete opposite. And you're also given some understanding of why my daughter just literally started sprouting like a bean. She was eating beans all day.
She finally could do the chemical reactions to be able to get the growth hormone. She needed the growth hormone. And that phosphorus is essential for her to be able to produce a growth hormone. And she wasn't able to produce it before.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
She didn't have the phosphorus in her diet.
Because we were always looking at it spiritually, which is not too different from science. I think science proves a lot of like spirit, you know, and like magic and miracles and such. And we were looking at it like, oh, well, the bean sprouts. So she's sprouting like a bean. It was true. But there's this real, you know, reason behind why that worked. It actually stimulated her growth hormone. That's incredible. And she's still the tallest child of her class, and she eats beans, you know, three times a day. So she's just like growing really well. That's exciting. Thank you for that. Okay, yeah. Lectins. Lectins are the next big one.
Lectins, so misunderstood. So lectins are incredible cellular communicators. One cell has to be able to talk to another cell because they're all working in tandem to be able to create whatever we're trying to grow or to be or whatever reaction's happening. And these are triggers to receptor sites. The phosphorus is actually working internally within the cell. With lectins, they're actually triggering the cell receptor sites so that these reactions with the phosphorus can go down through the, it's called downstream reactions, and happen. If we do not have a cellular communicator, if our one cell cannot talk to the other cell, then we will also have death. I mean, they are hugely important. And oxalates too. These two are coming together together. Oxalate, it works a little bit differently chemically than a lectin does. But I want to explain these together. They all have their purpose. They're all nutraceuticals. They're all helpful. But what most people don't know is that whenever you cook a bean, because these are water-soluble, oxalate and lectins are water-soluble, or you soak a bean, you lose a good portion of the lectins and the oxalates. They're no longer there because they went into the water. That's why, you know, when people say, you know, how should I make my beans? It's like you soak them, then pour off the water, rinse your beans. Now you boil your beans. Now you throw the water away, you know, rinse your beans, and now you have your cooked legume. And so you throw away your cooking water. People say, well, all the nutrients are in the cooking water. Well, the nutrients that we're looking for are actually still in the legume. And we're throwing away your demonized anti-nutrients, which really aren't anti-nutrients, but you're throwing away a vast majority of them. We've got some really nice scientific articles where they measure the exact amount of how much of this was in before, you know, and then how much is in there after. They lose a good majority and through the cooking process. And of course, we are going to cook a legume. You are not going to eat a hard pinto bean. It will crack your teeth.
The body has, nature and the body has said, like, the bean will hurt your teeth, so we're not going to let you eat it unless you're actually cooking it properly. Yes. Yeah, it's already taken care of in that way. I'm curious, what has made people fear lectins? Like, what's the scientific study or the concept that says don't eat nuts, seeds, or beans because of lectins, or even grains? Where does that go?
They think that the lectins are binding with the nutrients, same thing that the phosphorus is doing with the phytic acid, phylates, and the oxalates, you know, that you're binding up things, and so they're no longer available to you. It's just like, well, there's less of it, first of all. Not with phytic acid. You can boil a bean, you're not going to remove. You're talking about removing phosphorus, and without phosphorus, there are no proteins. It's just like you can't even put a protein together without phosphorus happening and getting involved in these reactions. And so they just don't understand. It's the same thing. We grab a hold of one little piece of information, and then we disregard the body of evidence that is out there.
And I want to break it down again. Like, what's actually the benefit of the lectin? What is it helping do in the body?
The cells to speak to one another.
Helping the cells speak to one another.
It's how the cells speak. It is, without it, we can't have cellular communication.
You know, I love hearing this because I'm always very fascinated in, like, indigenous ways and, like, you know, ancient wisdoms. And, you know, I think about the human species and how quickly we evolved. And our diet was largely things like beans, nuts, seeds, grains, and like some animal proteins and lots of wild vegetables. Like, that's what actually formed these intelligent bodies. So it's always strange to me that suddenly it's like these are anti-nutrients when for tens of thousands of years they built civilizations. So I love this awareness with you of kind of putting this to rest a bit.
Yeah. And that's a very good point. How did we survive? How did we get to where we are today without these foods that have been demonized? It's the way we got here.
Yeah, it really is. It even, I remember reading this brilliant book that explained how we even got to the arts and poetry and writing from the ability to be able to farm beans and grains, because we didn't have to be nomadic. We were able to, like, sit still and settle because now we had this ability to grow things. And so they've given us many gifts, you know, not just good health, but like even the parts of our culture. So, yeah, I find it interesting how there's sudden ideas that they'll hurt you when, again, our ancestors lived for a long time with them. So I appreciate that piece. How do you... Okay, so I'm actually thinking now, since you brought up scientific studies, like where, what are your ideas around the studies or the proof around beans and adrenaline? You know, obviously tons of personal case studies and I have my own, but how do you break that down for people that are really fixed on science that are like, I'm not going to try this until I know it works because I see it in the study.
Yeah. The issue is then that we have to go back into, you have to connect dots. That's the problem, because there are few scientific studies that are mounted to say, okay, these number of people have this much stress in their life and are producing this much adrenaline, and this is the control group, and the control group is eating, you know, not eating beans, and this group over here, group A, is eating this many beans a day, and group B is eating this many beans a day, and we do, you know, a scientifically controlled experiment. There's no one mounting that, because I've actually put in grants with the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, and been refused the grants, and didn't get the money because it takes a lot of money to run these studies. And so, because as I was told by the head of the committee, when I would put in for this one particular grant, she said, Karen, this is not a medication. This is a food. We're not sponsoring any grants unless it's a medication or a biometric, some type of machine to measure, yes, you know, whatever. And so we don't have any monies to fund these studies. So they're not really being done unless it's like your practice, my practice, we see it happening. You and I can just notate things, but it's not a scientifically controlled study because, you know, some of that comes into moral values too. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, so these people are really stressed out over here. They could use some beans and soluble fiber, but you're the control group. You just suffer with your anxiety and panic mm-hmm. attacks because, you know, we're going to help these people over there and you just suffer over here, you know. So we run into yeah. that too.
Well, you also speak to the nuance around the science, the institution of science, and these studies get funded because you can make money off of pharmaceutical. Yes. And that's an ethical dilemma, you know, where to go to the store and pay $1.50 for a week's worth of beans, that's accessible healthcare. That's much yeah. more accessible than anything else, but that's not being yeah. funded because of the bureaucracy.
Yeah. There's no money in it. There's
yeah.
no money.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
Yeah. So what you have to do is that you have to go back and connect the dots. We do know that soluble fiber, we do know about the enterohepatic recirculation. That's this process where we can bind up these things that are recycling in bile. Many, many, many scientific articles on that. We know that. We know about how much we're recycling. That is all well documented. So we know then, and we also know hormones are excreted in the bile because we can measure the hormone in the bile. We have studies that do that. So we know that hormones are in the bile fluid. So, okay, we got that. We know that enterohepatic recirculation is happening. And we have, okay. And we know that soluble fiber binds. We know this. We have all kinds of studies that show that soluble. I mean, you even got it on your oatmeal canister, you know, healthy for the heart, the soluble fiber. And it's bringing down cholesterol. Well, where's cholesterol? It's in your bile fluids. And that's the way we get through the cholesterol. So, I mean, it's all there. But you have to then go through and connect the dots because no one has actually done the formal studies, Someday
that's how
you're
I feel.
We're going to have to do a formal study.
I think
study.
We should. I mean, I really want to help you with this because I have so many, I mean, I have hundreds of people. I know you have thousands that we could totally like get their consent and do amazing work. Because, yeah. you know, when people ask me, I mean, I'm such a body science person. I'm like, my body is the laboratory. Like that's going to tell me everything I need. But some people really want the, you know, they really want the institution or the exterior, you know, authority to say, yep, I'm putting my stamp on it, beans equal da, da, da. And like you said, when you connect the dots, it's obvious. And then when you have people after 1 week, I mean, some people, it's amazing, after 3 days of the first class. So in week two of my class, the first thing we talk about are beans because it's a nutrition week. So everyone's learning, how do I start working with stress and healing trauma through food? And then we do a bunch of other exercises through the 6 weeks. But in the second week, it's really food-based. That's when we actually start eating beans and eating this kind of lifestyle and removing the caffeine. And 3 days into it, the list of people, I slept for the first time in years last night. I didn't have a panic attack at work today. I noticed something felt off. I was calm. Like these incredible testimonies just in a few days. So for me, when someone asks like, where's the science? I'm like, well, it's coming, but until it does, eat some beans and just see what happens in your body. Like, that's the science, right? And yes. So it, you said that in a past episode, my community manager and friend Camille brought up, she said that you said something about dairy. You're like, stop eating it for 3 weeks and then eat it again and see what happens. And that teaches you everything you need to know about your body with dairy. And it's kind of the same, isn't it?
You have to have a scientific study to tell you that you're doing
this or not. Exactly.
Yes. It would be fun to do this if, you know, if someone would like to mount that up and, you know, fund the study, you know, I am willing to, you know, to do that. We could work together. That'd be great.
But yeah, let's look into that. That sounds really fun. So that's what, and if anyone listening that has any kind of like, you know, people or connections to this kind of grants or studies, like reach out to either of us, because I would love to get some of this on paper so people can be like, oh, I trust it now.
Yes, now it's published in such and such journal.
Yeah, right.
Now it's valid, even though I have my own personal life experience. But okay.
And I'm having this dream of walking down the bean aisle and seeing like on the can, like, proven studies have shown reduces stress. You know, it's like, how amazing that would be. So, okay, my final question is, how do you recommend people titrate beans into their bodies who have like huge bloating responses, but they really want to eat the beans, or they have IBS and Crohn's and those kind of things? What do you recommend?
For my clients that have tremendous gas problems already, you know, and they have this huge stress response, it's like, let's not even start on the beans. Just start on a little bit of psyllium. And sometimes I only say a quarter of a teaspoon. And let's just start your, just start slowly. And it doesn't mean, oh, you're on a quarter of a teaspoon of psyllium for the next 9 months. No, just it, a couple days, you know, it's just like, maybe you could do a half a teaspoon now. All right. Now, because every time you put soluble fiber in, you are removing some of that adrenaline. Because, you know, we've covered other episodes, but we'll just mention it right now briefly. Your adrenaline is recycling at 95%. So it's going back in your body. It's going into your gut. Yes, but it's going right back into your bloodstream. And then you have another stressful event. You even produce more. So we have got to start removing some of it, because all your stress responses are from the over-circulation of adrenaline in your bloodstream. And that's what's causing your stress response. So just let's start getting rid of a little bit of it. Mm-hmm. And what's really cool is it happens right away. It's just not, oh, I have to wait for 3 months before, you know. Mm-hmm. No, you eat the beans now. You will feel calm now.
That's what I love about the bean protocol, is a lot of things, like a rash, for instance, that's going to take a couple weeks to a couple months. Like autoimmune things could take a couple months, a couple years, depending on how long we've had them. But the actual sensation of being amped up with adrenaline within minutes starts to shift. Yes. And that's so empowering and exciting, because when, again, when you have a little mistrust or you've tried everything, you have no hope left, then you eat two spoonfuls of beans and suddenly you feel centered. I mean, you're not making that up. It's such a tangible experience. So I think that's the gift of them, really.
Right. So we use psyllium for those that are really gaseous, or if you're not, then just start, you know, if they're really not bad, I'll just say, well, let's just start with one tablespoon of beans six separate times a day. Just one level tablespoon, one, that's all, one mouthful. That's it. Mm-hmm. Do well with that. Okay, let's go to two.
I love that. That's such a great start.
Yeah, you just get started that way.
And I want to just add to that and just see what you think as well. And you said this a bit earlier, but I think it deserves a repeat. Even either while you're incorporating beans, or if you're like, okay, I want to, but every time I do, I get gassy. I love to start with just take away the stimulants first then, like start reducing stimulants first, either simultaneously to adding beans or just first, and mm-hmm. then add the beans, and the digestive experience will be completely different. Yes. Do you want to add anything to that?
I absolutely agree with that. Absolutely. So it depends on a person if they want to, you know, take it step by step, or they say, oh, just give me the whole ball of wax. I'm going to, you know, I want to roll into this, and, you know. So it's however they want to do it, but absolutely, you've got to take away the stimulants too. That has got to be a part of the program.
Yeah.
Because you can eat beans all day long, and like we were talking about before, and you have a stimulation of, you know, perfumes, fragrances, essential oils. Well, we're not making a lot of progress right now.
Yeah, and it's so important to note, like when we're talking about stimulants, we're only talking about the ones you can control. You know, it's like you're having coffee, you're having the perfumes, you're eating a ton of sugar. Those stimulants, that's what you actually can control. You can control your boss screaming at you, or the traffic jam, or someone dying. Like that's already going to happen in life. So we're already going to have stress hormones, but these additional ones are the ones we can start reducing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Thank you so much always for your time and generosity. It's always so fun to hang out with you.
Yeah, it is my pleasure.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll get that study for everybody.
Yes.
For more information on Karen's work, you can visit KarenHurd.com and you'll find a ton of specialized courses you can take and own and start deepening your own healing journey. And what's really beautiful about her is once you take one of her courses, you have access to her for life via email. So you can ask any questions you have. You can say what's coming up for you. You can get personalized advice and strategies, actually, for your health, which I think is very generous and exciting. Thank you for listening to this episode. It was so fun, and I'll see you soon. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. My question for you is, where do you feel the episode? Take a breath. And just notice, what's your body doing right now? Sit with it, let it speak to you, and let whatever comes up, come up. And your only job is to listen. For all the wisdom you need is right inside of you. To learn more about my work, you can visit holisticlifenavigation.com and sign up for my mailing list. You'll receive a weekly newsletter with specific monthly topics, free resources, and upcoming events. You can also follow me on Instagram. If you like my podcast, please leave a review and share. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll see you next time.